This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the morning run, and you're here with Wong Shaoning and Koo Soo Chuang. Now, in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking about GLCs and the role they play in the post-COVID-19 economy. But before that, markets. Because US markets rallied last night, tech stocks, again, having a super-duper day. Meanwhile, the Dow Jones closed up 0.7%, S&P 500 up 0.8%, and NASDAQ hitting probably another record high, up 1.4%.
Well, in our part of the woods, only Japan was the decliner yesterday, dropping by nearly 1%. The Hang Seng was up by 0.6%, the Shanghai Com was up by 1.7%, Singapore was up by 0.3%, and the FBM KLCI was up by 1%. Get this, guys, right? Out of the whole region, the KLCI is only now down 0.3% year-to-date. What's the wager that today we go into the green for the year?
Quite likely.
Quite likely, right?
And you think, you know, everyone's been saying that the COVID-19 will bring on the world's greatest recession since last seen in the 1930s.
Can you imagine? The markets are going crazy.
Unemployment is, you know, in Malaysia is probably going to hit 6%. But it seems as if the markets, or at least the investors, are really just looking at 2021 when everybody's eyeing that so-called 6-7% recovery. But that's this right. Year, wash out, never mind, forget it. Let's just move on.
Well, my good friend and learned colleague Julian Ng once said, markets go up and markets go down.
Oh my. Anyway, to help us maybe make sense of this conundrum and give us some market insights is Han Tan joining us on the line, for a market analyst with FXTM. Han, good morning. Now, Bank Negara cut the OPR rate on Tuesday. So what can you read from their dovish statement? Does this suggest that second half growth will be weak?
Yeah, I think it speaks more to the uncertainty surrounding the economic outlook. That 25 basis point cut, you know, suggests there's some insuring against downside risk while making sure there's still enough policy room to counter them should these downside risks manifest over the coming months. No, hence, just the 25 basis point cut as opposed to the 50 that some were expecting. And that leaves another 175 left in the ammo box, right? So I think with this added insurance, Bank Negara is likely going to wait and see how these support measures, the 125 basis points have been reduced already so far this year, how those play out in the domestic economy, while at the same time, you know, keep a wary eye on what's happening on the global stage.
Han, there are two more MPC meetings for Bank Negara till year end. So do you expect another rate cut before year end then?
Yeah, well, I will look at a Q3 first. And also, I think Q3, it's a case of wait and see because, again, we started off the year at 3%. Now it's a 1.75. So, you know, given the lag that monetary policy requires before, you know, it shows up in the economic data, I think any adjustments might be closer. Well, will be in a Q4. You know, or I wouldn't be surprised if Bank Negara stands pat if they think that the 125 basis point cut so far this year is sufficient already.
What is your sense, Han, of the ringgit's direction, given the fact that Bank Negara has cut rates and there's expectations for another cut, possibly?
Yeah, well, so for right now, not much, because there is this easing bias already across regional central banks and really all around the world. So Malaysia's no exception from that global trend. For example, just next door, the Philippines also cut by about 175 basis points so far this year. So when we look at the FX space, it's still a dollar-driven narrative. Many currencies, Asian currencies, are taking advantage of that weaker dollar. You know, of late, the ringgit has been able to stay on the stronger side of 4.30 against the dollar and should continue doing so, barring a sudden surge in risk aversion.
So Han, you know, you just said that regional currencies seem to have been doing better than expected. Is this a case of the respective economy outlooks improving, or like you say, is it just US dollar weakness?
Yeah, it's primarily a weaker dollar story because for the economic outlook, it's more about pricing in some expectations for those recoveries, right, in 2021. And I think you guys alluded to it just moments ago. You know, but these are just expectations, right? Not yet reality. You cannot yet rule out the risk of a double dip in the global economy, for example. I mean, say if you look at the data, out of the likes of Germany from this week. The recovery there is not as strong as expected. Even with China's data, you know, I personally am still needing a bit more assurance, more data points before calling this a sustained recovery, right? So if this struggle to move beyond the pandemic takes longer than expected, and it, at the same time, it really strains the ability of policymakers to support their respective economies, you know, then I think some of these Asian currencies might explore some of, or unwind some of the recent gains.
What is your sense of the gold price? And do you think that this rally can be sustained into the equity market rally the longer it happens?
Yeah, so the short answer is yes, I think there's more upside for gold here because there are still lingering concerns over the state of the global economy. Also, you're seeing this tremendous amount of liquidity, right, in global markets. So money is, you know, is finding its home in the safety of gold and these other safe haven assets and many other asset classes, to be frank. So a bit of a case of a rising tide lifts all boats, so to speak here. But even in bouts of risk on mode, like we saw after last week's positive surprise in the U.S. non-farm payrolls report, right? I mean, gold fell below 1760, but recovered very quickly. And here we are at 1810 today, right? And then another big factor is, of course, with yields on 10-year U.S. Treasuries staying below 1% since March. That really makes gold all the more appealing, even though it's a it's a non-yielding asset. So, can this upward trend in gold be sustained? I say yes, but perhaps not at the same pace as we saw in the last quarter.
And Han, if we look at statesides, right? U.S. jobless claims come out tonight. What are your expectations and where do you see payrolls trending in the near term, considering that there seems to be a resurgence of the virus in some U.S. states?
Yeah, so I'm expecting the pace of the recovery to moderate further because I think it's rather concerning that months after that, those first stay-at-home orders were issued, and with U.S. states having reopened since, now we could still see an initial jobless claims that's between 1.3 to about 1.4 million. Now, to put that into context, that's about seven times more than the average over the last 2 years. And then if you look at continuing claims, that's Americans who are still on the dole, that number could still remain stubbornly high, right? Around 18 to 19 million. So all that said, I think the jobless claims will fit into a more wing-shaped recovery for the U.S. economy rather than a V-shaped recovery.
Thank you for your time today, Han. That was Han Tan, market analyst with FXTM. And gold, 1800. It has seems to have broken that psychological level.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's talking about gold, right? In fact, everybody's talking about gold and Bitcoin as potential beneficiaries of what's, you know, the craziness that's been happening on share markets. People don't believe it's going to be a permanent, this rally. And they suggest, and people all the way from Ray Dalio to, I don't know, Hugh Henry, I think, formerly Eclectica, they all say Bitcoin, gold, if you don't believe what's happening. And there's a lot of things to not believe in the share market rally.
Well, I guess like most investors, right, you're thinking about how best to diversify your portfolio and hedge your bets. So gold is one option, which is kind of contradictory under normal financial market theory, because usually one asset class, if equities are going up, then gold comes down. But, you know, this market's gone crazy, right?
It's gone crazy.
So every asset class is, you know, up. And that's on the back of just interest rates being ultra low. Because in the past, when interest rates were very low, I mean, or in the past, when interest rates are low, you would think of gold as a possible investment. Because we know gold doesn't give you any yield, like what Han says, right? And there's also practical issues of storage. But I think in today's day and age, there are many ways to invest in gold. You have gold ETF funds. That's one option. So I think gold will increasingly be something that people will consider. And of course, now there's Bitcoin, which some say is the new alternative to gold.
That's right. Because and Bitcoin is attractive because you can't print more of it. There's only a finite number of coins in circulation.
I think 24 million, something like that.
So the remaining 3 million odd bitcoins will only be made available in, like, I don't know, 80 years or something. You can't print more bitcoins. So,
but with every asset class or every investment instrument comes its own risk, right?
That's right.
But meanwhile, we look at Hong Kong, because this is a Reuters story. Ant Group, the fintech arm of Alibaba, is planning an IPO in Hong Kong as soon as this year, and actually targets a valuation of more than $200 billion. Now, Alibaba on its own is currently worth about $700 billion based on its US listing, and owns about 33% of Ant.
Of which 20% of that valuation was actually attributed to its rise in the last 1 month. In Hong Kong, Alibaba shares, and by the way, might I just add, Alibaba's ticker in the Hong Kong exchange is Gao Gao Pat Pat.
Oh, very fat,
right? Very fat, right? So it went from about 210 Hong Kong dollars at the end of June. Today, Alibaba trades at nearly $240, okay? So obviously, if you get to list your subsidiary and you list it at a valuation of $200 billion, that's going to be good for your cash. It's going to be good for your ability to raise more capital in the markets.
Well, yeah, and on a sum of parts basis, right, if you own something worth 33% of $200 billion, theoretically, your share price should also see a bump, right?
Yeah, remember when Yahoo was in the doldrums and then they owned 5% of... Was it Facebook or something?
That was worth more than the value.
That was worth more than the market value, yeah.
But later on, we'll actually be talking about Alibaba and Tencent with Chelsea Tam, analyst at Morningstar, and you can catch that later at 7:30. But in the meanwhile, it's not all good news around the world, because United Airlines have actually notified 36,000 employees or 45% of its workforce that their jobs are at risk after the federal payroll aid expires at the end of September. Now, the final layoff tally hasn't been finalized, and that number may be smaller as workers weigh offers to leave voluntarily. Now, the planned furloughs include about 15,000 flight attendants, 11,000 customer service staff, and 5,500 maintenance employees.
Well, nearly 4,000 have taken VSS packages already. So, not great. I mean, remember when Warren Buffett basically sold all his airline stock holdings? Was it 2 months ago now? Seems like an eternity.
Well, it was the right move, right?
It was the right move. It's an existential threat to the industry. And just yesterday, AirAsia announced that their auditors, Ernst & Young, found that there were significant question marks over their existence as a long-term commercial proposition.
Yeah, this is something we'll be covering again at 9:15, actually, because, they say they're a PN17 company, but haven't been designated as one.
Wow.
Yeah.
So either way, if you're looking for a trade on this, what is share price? I think 80 plus cents or something?
It was suspended yesterday on the back of the announcement by the auditor, but I'm not sure whether that trading was resumed later on in the afternoon. But nonetheless, I think aviation stocks, it's going to be a tough place, right? Especially in the US, because we've seen a resurgence of cases. And then moving on to Japan, just because the world seems to be on fire, or at least for some sectors. M&A is still going on because ITOCHU is seeking to take full control of convenience store chain Family Mart, which we have some outlets in Malaysia, by the way, which is owned by QL Resources. Now, they're doing so through a tender offer valued as much as 580.9 billion yen, which is about 5.4 billion US dollars. Now, ITOCHU already owns 50.1% of Family Mart and is offering 2,300 yen per share. Now, I think in recent times, actually, with COVID-19, actually, small stores have seen good business because people don't want to expose themselves to the virus. So some people have avoided going to huge hypermarkets or big supermarkets. So maybe this is one way ITOCHU, which is a large conglomerate, is playing the post-COVID-19 era new normal kind of business ventures.
Well, they're taking advantage of the decline in the share price of Family Mart, right? It's over 31% lower over the course of the year. But then their own premium buyout offer premium is about the same also, 31% over their Family Mart's existing share price. So basically, it's at parity which was the share price at the start of this year.
Well, we'll be watching this news nonetheless. But up next, we'll be speaking to Professor Edmund Gomez, Professor of Economics at University of Malaya. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.